The Star Wars franchise has been around since the history of time. In fact, Henry VIII's favourite film was Attack of the Clones. But now, Star Wars is bigger than ever thanks to the work of the Disney company, who bought the franchise in 2012 for the hefty sum of 50p, which they sold from the back of a van in Camden Market.
Inflation, guys.
Now, Star Wars is bigger than ever, but that after the flop of Solo, it's now on a bit of a weird place after Episode 9. No one knows what's going to happen, apart from there's still going to be films and TV shows. But the real question we're going to ask today in Tom Hanks' Defend Force is, first of all, one, why is my water bill increasing? Two, what Star Wars film would we like to see?
So, welcome back to Tom Hanks' Defend Force.
And now, for our feature presentation, Tom Hanks' Defend Force, with your hosts, Alex Halpern and Jack Fryer. A podcast for people who love film, television, and Tom Hanks.
Welcome back to Tom Hanks Defend Force, the smooth sounds of cinema and TV everywhere, all over the world, wherever you like it. So, as my wonderful co-host Jack was just describing, we are focusing this episode on our perfect Star Wars film. Everyone has a favourite Star Wars character, plot, scenario, dream, subreddit, the list goes on. But the five of us, which I'll introduce everyone to in a second, will all be discussing what makes the best Jar Jar Binks. So, going round in a circle, I'm Alex, your lovable co-host. Oh god, the cringe is real.
I'm Jack, I'm the other co-host. You may have heard me before on such podcasts as Tom Hanks Defend Force, and that one time I was on the Martini Police.
And to the left of Jack, we have...
Hi, I'm Kat, I'm Jack's girlfriend, and they somehow let me come back on this.
And to Jack's right, we have...
I'm a cross-dressing anarchist that lives in Jack's kitchen.
Yeah, yes. Brings the party. And to Ella's right, we have...
Hi, I'm Eleanor, I'm Kat's little sister, and I'm just here for the ride.
Hey.
Boom! Yes. Awesome. Yeah. Sweet. So... I feel like Jack really wants to start first.
Yeah, I've planned this already.
Straight into it. Boom. Here we go.
So mine's,
America.
Yeah. So, yeah, mine's going to be an exploration of what it means to live in the Star Wars franchise through modern interpretive hip-hop. It's actually going to be... It's one of the things Star Wars, I think, needs to do is focus more on the aliens, because we've got all these great human leads, and like apart from like Chewbacca... Yoda, Jar Jar, the Nemodians. We don't really see the much of the aliens. So what I want to do is start it's a quadrilogy, but the first one is between Episode 1 and 2, because what I really want to know is how the Republic solved crises without the clones.
Mm-hmm.
So it would feature like a squad of people. There'd be an officer, a character, a leader, and there's different characters in it. So there's a different species. There's a Quarren, you know, the big ones with the... The tentacles. There's a Twi'lek sniper in it. There's a, you know, Ponda Baba Wolves guy. Yeah, there's one in there. There's also the token human. But there's basically, they have a mission, and one of the leaders killed. And so they get a squad, and there's a human Jedi joined the squad for a mission, and also a Rodian, and also Shriv from the Battlefront games. He's going to pop up as well as the newbie.
Very nice.
By the time we meet him in Battlefront 2, he's the experienced veteran he is, so we get a bit of backstory for him because he's a fan favourite and an absolute lad. So basically, it would be about them like investigating the Trade Federation, and obviously you see this Jedi, this squad, like, we don't need a Jedi, we've got the guns for it, and Jedi's like, I'm just new here, like, I want to help you, and he's like, I want to earn my stripes, and they're like, we don't need you, like, and Mace Windu's like, he's coming, like, okay. He says that, yeah, Mace Windu with his Greg sausage roll, was like, he's coming, like, he's just shaking a sausage roll at these, like, commando figures, like, yeah, because Greg's exists in the Star Wars universe, in my
The land of dreams. It's Disneyland now. Yeah. So dream away.
So basically, the film would just like... The first one would be about them like solving, trying to just like de-escalate this squad of aliens. Obviously, would be about, you know, them de-escalating crises with just trying to, like, just small firefights, like small Republic going on missions for Republic, like to quell like small uprisings. Obviously, the first one's about them of just like fighting like some Trade Federation, obviously like a fallout, some it's about the rise of the separatists as well, but like they end up getting caught in some little conflict.
Ooh, nice.
Well, then the second one though, it's them in the Clone Wars, so it's them fighting alongside clones.
So oh, it's about, so the teleology naturally.
Yeah. Okay. So it's obviously the Jedi. There's more Jedi in it though, and obviously the Jedi is now an actual knight, and the squad relationship's a bit like, it's a bit like more like a bit like Band of Brothers in a way, but all different aliens from the Star Wars universe and a Jedi.
But it's a long time ago in a galaxy far,
yeah,
far away.
Yeah, and obviously though, the film would end during Order 66. Obviously, then all the betrayal is, and obviously it's about the thing: is their allegiance to the Republic? Do they stay loyal to their friend, or is it the Republic, which is now the Empire? Obviously, they all just stick with the Jedi, but one of them leaves, and he's like, look, I'm going to give you a head start. Just get out of my face, basically. And then the third one would be about them in the Rebellion. You should, like, them just fighting with the Rebels. It's like a proper, like, squad of men just, like, fighting alongside, fighting Stormtroopers. Like, just all these little covert missions. They can, like, run across other, like, famous characters in the Star Wars universe. Like, Leia, Bail Organa, those, or everyone basically in, who's in Rogue One in that scene. Yeah,
the Jawas.
Yeah, the Jawas, they can pop up. Yeah.
They've got crazy-ass little Jawas
then,
doing their thing.
Then obviously the fourth and final one, though, would be like after Episode 6. It's them like hunting down the remnants of the Empire, like all grizzled veterans. It's about them trying to solve a new Republic. So it's like a proper journey from like, for Shriv, he'd be the main character, fight him from like a newbie to becoming a very, very respected rebel leader.
Mm.
So it's kind of his story, but it also features all the different aliens, because I think because they've got so many amazing species in the Star Wars universe. You know, whether it's from like, if you've got the big hitters like Wookiee, Ewok, want to see like the Rodians, like Greedo, like the Quarren, all the Mon Calamari, like Akbar, I want to see them, more of them, because like, yeah,
we need more Akbar.
Yeah, and like Akbar,
George Lucas said that originally, more Akbar,
because Akbar could like pop up as well, like he could be one to give him a mission, you know. So yeah, like, I want you to go to Greg's to get my order. What do you want? It's a wrap, you know, just all that classic.
The guys in Skyrim, they give you your missions.
Yeah, but we can't have more Akbar.
Yeah,
do you know why?
Why?
This trap.
Oh, this guy.
And there's a bit where they
give me a bump.
I did just fist bumped for all the audio listeners out there. But no, basically, there could be like a scene where there's like a awkward, do you know the opera in episode 3? They go to a premiere of an opera and they go, who's that guy? It's a pap. I'm like, yeah. But yeah, that's my Dream Stars film. It would be about a squad. It would be, instead of like, there would be a Jedi in it, like kind of with their helping them, and but it would ultimately be like a squad, like a proper squad of just normal soldiers and their relationship and like them navigating an ever-changing galaxy over the space of four films.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you actually thought about this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
This is a very, I mean, Bob Iger is getting this script.
I will write this for Bob. If Bob, Kathleen, whoever, anyone from Lucasfilm is listening, like, tweet us.
It's already written. Listen. He just needs to print it off.
No, I've got it written in my head already. I know what happens. I know who dies and when. So, yeah.
He's done the editing.
I've done it, yeah.
And now we know.
Give me 200 million. I'll make it in my garage. So, yeah.
Boom.
The biggest garage ever called Pinewood. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Kat, what's your Star Wars?
Not a film, because now we have the wonderful Disney Plus coming. It means that we can expand a little bit on series and push the boundaries slightly. You know, like how Marvel want to sort of go, oh, how about WandaVision? Let's sort of push what we can possibly do. And they're sort of making a point about, oh, it's going to be different than anything you've seen. Mm-hmm. Even though it probably won't.
But WandaVision's meant to be a cross between the superhero film and the Dick Van Dyke show that's how it's been described as. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Well, I want to go a bit of a different way on sort of pushing what could be in the Star Wars universe. I want David Attenborough going around all of the planets during the original trilogy.
Nice.
Yeah. And doing a full sort of describing what's happening to each of these creatures.
Oh my god,
yeah. We'll have an episode per planet of the key planets.
Oh my god,
that's
amazing.
Yeah.
So for Hoth, for instance, he can say about how this poor creature that was only being territorial around its area ended up wounded, its arm cut off by
the Wampas.
The Wampa defends its territory.
Exactly. And I want to see this.
I want to add to that, like, have you ever played the Mass Effect series of games?
Yes.
Right, because in the modern sci-fi canon, that's a real landmark. Because in it, you get this codex, you wander around the galaxy, you meet all these strange alien races, whatever. You get this codex of alien races, and it explains it to you in a kind of David Attenborough-style voice, their whole history and culture. And, like, I feel like that's very much, like, the kind of thing that we're going for.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to see the, I'm having a brain fart here, but, you know, the big pit that...
Sarlacc pit.
Sarlacc pit. Yeah. I'd love to see the Sarlacc pit that whole creature's biology and if it has a kind of ecology.
Like, what are its roots? What are its, what's its beneath roots? The surface?
And what is the ecological system that brings that thing into existence? You know,
how does it breed? What does it like the idea
where did it evolve from? Where,
I'd like to see Dave Attwood just like, I'm going to voluntarily get swallowed, and eventually he just blasts his way out. And just like, with, like,
no, he would never harm an animal.
He wouldn't. He'd just sit there.
You should see him. He's got that sort of like lustful gaze behind his
eyes. He always carries it like a revolver on set.
I think he's in some fucked up shit.
Like, you see him after, he's like a Coruscant nightclub, just like throwing Republic credits at these strippers. It's like, you know that bar where they get Zan Reese on Attack of the Clones on the Underworld? He's like just like there, like behind like a curtain, just like like gambling on all these like pod races.
Hey, he killed the entire like Mos Eisley canteen band. Like, they all died in a shootout started by David Allen.
They're stuffed on the wall now.
They didn't play that same song. They're like, going to try Op New, and I know play that same song. He just pulls out a blast and guns it down.
You know what's weird as a footnote is I always get that song confused with the Donkey Kong song from Mario Kart.
I can see that.
Yeah, you know, they're basically the same song.
I've got a tour shirt. I've got that Mos Eisley band. I've got their tour shirt. They've actually got a tour shirt online.
So where's they tour to? What's the
I think the Death Star the Alderaan date was cancelled. And there's obviously all the just different planets, basically. So it's really cool.
I reckon Alderaan was like, I reckon Alderaan was absolutely beautiful. I reckon that was a place of sunshine and rainbows and lots of like hippos that aren't the most deadly creature in like.
There's a little chef on every motorway, you know.
Burger King is nice. the possibilities are endless.
There's always well staffed, you know. That's what someone actually. There's this video about how he'd make the original trilogy better, and he said he would make it better by just replacing Naboo with Alderaan. So obviously, if you were to watch it from 1 to 6, you'd have more of a relationship with Alderaan, so its structure would mean a lot more to you, which I think is actually a really, really great point of view.
That's very fair.
That's really, really good. Nice. So, sorry, Kat, you were saying.
No, that's pretty much it.
That's a great idea, to be fair. I would pay a lot of money for that series.
I just want it. And it has to be David Attenborough style, because every Brit was raised with, like, Attenborough documentaries.
Yeah.
Like, you can't... Like, if you ever put on a nature documentary that isn't David Attenborough, do you just get 5 minutes in and feel disappointed?
It's not the voice. It's not the...
It has to be the voice.
The Attenboroughness. Yeah.
Obviously, you know, there was that, obviously, he has that quote, you know, it's good about, I can't remember what it was, but it's about, like, you know, it's better sometimes to wipe out some humans for good environment.
Yeah.
Like, he just shepherds all these creatures off world and just blows up the Death Star. Like, Or the world according to Jeff Goldblum, have a galaxy according to Jeff Goldblum. Like, it can blow up a planet,
all by itself.
It's like, and now we see the Ewoks walking to the spaceship.
Gently shuffling towards their leaves.
And the Ewok uses the Stormtrooper's head as a drum set. Quite a miracle. Oh, look, it's Lars Ulrich on the back of it.
He takes some woodland fur to wipe his bottom. Realises it's a Wookiee. Dies.
And what's this? A golden man in a floating chair. The Ewoks gather round, intrigued.
Yes, this is happening. Cat's already won.
Oh,
thanks. We're gonna end this podcast here.
So yeah, my emotional story about troopers navigating the galaxy has been beaten by David Attenborough. Fair play, that's fine.
Do you want to know a true fact? My brother, I won't give his real name, but my brother's nickname when we were growing up was Ewok. From the age of about 13 to even now, his name was Ewok because he's kind of short and hairy. that's a true story. Like, if you ask people around our hometown if they know his real name, they'll be like, no. And if you ask people if they know Ewok, they'll be like, oh yeah, of course I know Ewok.
He should own that. That's
He does. He does.
There are worse nicknames out there.
Does he have like an Ewok tattoo?
He's going to get one.
Oh.
By the end of the year, that's my challenge.
It's going to be Warwick Davis personally does it.
All down his back.
Right. So, Alice, I think it's your go.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I have an issue with Star Wars.
Okay.
Star Wars, for
I'm
me,
so ready for this.
The first three episodes represent to me...
What, 4 to 6 or 1 to 3?
1 to 3.
Okay.
And you know what? The whole original canon of Star Wars represents
the experience.
Yeah. What is known as a bourgeois revolution. You have a vast fascistic empire.
Yep.
Horrible. We can all agree on that. And then challenging that, you have a load of relatively well-off white dudes who just feel like they don't have their interests represented. in the original, you know, 4 to 6 episodes, there's like 2 women. Like, there's no gay characters, there's 1 black guy. So what I want to see in the new Star Wars, if it was up to me, I'd like to see like a black, queer, women's led revolution, directly democratic, challenging that shit. I want to see Kurdistan, the Rojava revolution, direct democracy, attacking the whole system, bringing it down to a directly democratic confederation of planets.
I like it. Nice.
That's what I'm about. Wow. I think that Star Wars, in some ways, although I think it's a fantastic piece of science fiction literature, I feel like it in many ways kind of reinforces these notions of like capitalism and white supremacy and you know, masculinism that we need to leave behind in the 70s. I feel like Star Wars could pave the way for something a lot stronger.
So do you think we're seeing that with new characters like Rey and
Finn, Poe?
I mean, I guess with characters like,
I think,
like Kylo Ren, we're kind of, you know, sort of deconstructing that tradition, you know, the sort of traditional like ultra bad guy masculinity
and,
that we have.
I can't remember what her name is, but there's the female stormtrooper.
Phasma.
She's fantastic.
This is the thing.
And she killed it.
And I always think of, there's a very famous picture, taking us away from Star Wars slightly, from the Kurdish Syrian revolution, of a lady holding a rifle and doing like a peace sign with her hands.
Who is Kurdish? Or
She's a Kurdish lady. But for me, I feel like Phasma in some way is kind of channeling that feeling of like empowerment and like self, what would you call it?
Self-belief,
self-empowerment, you know, Phasma for me.
Fulfilling her own destiny.
That's it. I want to see more characters and I want to see an ethos amongst the rebels that like fosters that kind of feeling.
You should definitely read the Phasma book because she's in it, for what I remember. She's just like just in some tribe, then she just ends up bumping into the First Order and then just going straight into like into its like power structure.
Heck yeah, man, I'm all about that.
Like, yeah.
let's tear down the Empire, but let's also challenge the Rebellion and their preconceptions about what power is. Do you know what I mean?
We should
align ourselves with the Rebellion insofar as the Empire. But let's not be fools in the sense that we think they've provided all the answers. That's
what I love with Rogue One, is that they actually say the Rebellion's flawed as anything
as well. Oh, Rogue One
is my favourite Star Wars.
And I feel like that's a theme that the Star Wars writers should pick up on and definitely carry through. I don't want that to be like a kind of footnote. I want that to be like the thing.
It appeals to the modern audience.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, that's why I like Rogue One, because you've got like Saw Gerrera's rebels who are like proper like extremists, then you've also got the actual Rebellion who are like trying to just bring back democracy and the public, and you've got this interesting like the enemy of me is my friend kind of relationship between them. So
yeah.
Strong shout.
So yeah.
Yeah,
so good way of looking at it.
So those are my feelings on the...
I'm
going to resume my place underneath Jack's sink and drain clean.
Continue my role in American Horror Story.
Yeah.
Cool. Love it,
this was my lunch break.
Yeah, right. You thought I was joking about the cross-dressing anarchist thing. No, I'm literally wearing a dress right now. Like, you know.
The washing machine is quite comfortable at the moment.
Oh, man, it's comfortable. And, you know, when the vibration...
As soon as the soap comes in, then no.
It's the ride of your life, honestly.
But the tumble dryer is warmer, though, so that's where you do some winter.
That's like the sauna.
I like a challenge.
Experimental.
All right, so...
We grow through challenges. That's a really interesting approach.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... But I guess if you were to focus and, you know, I guess if you were to put the Rebels' perspective into, you know, a very human context of the struggle of the Kurdish people, then would you not have to relate? I mean, how would you? I guess the question would be, how do you put the Empire, like the fundamental enemies of the rebels, into a very real context as well?
Okay,
because the Kurdish people are fighting a real mixture of different fronts.
So I feel like this requires more explanation. For me, sci-fi, what we call sci-fi, science fiction or space fantasy, if you want to call that, is that thing that represents our aspirations as a group, as a culture, as a species, like all humans. It takes those kind of worries and anxieties that are kind of universal in a sense and creates kind of fictional areas where we can kind of address them. So for me, the Empire is like is all of those feelings.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, I just pissed.
Everybody enjoy the kitchen sink.
Oh, yes. But for me, the empire is all of those feelings.
Sorry, I had to get a glass of water. I've got a headache.
Ah, there we go.
You're welcome.
I pissed in it.
Alla also pissed.
So for me, the empire is all of those feelings of like feeling attacked, feeling suppressed. And, you know, that varies from culture to culture. Whether it's specifically in a military sense, as we were talking about before, which applies not just in Kurdistan, but loads of different places, or in a slightly more moderate, slightly more mild sense, in the sense that people in where we're filming, the UK, where we're recording, sorry, the UK, where, you know, life is reluctant to use the word easier, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that those feelings of being attacked, being oppressed, feeling like you can't be the person you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the empire represents all of those. And I'm not smart enough to come up with a fictional entity that can represent all of those things.
No, you are.
But I hope someone is. Yeah. You know, like, you know what I mean? Like.
Well, the night is young and we are just a few beers and other cocktails deep.
That's true.
We'll be in touch with you guys in a few hours with an update on that.
Yeah, but for me, the empire represents that feeling of like being told you can't do what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that feeling of that thing above you that keeps you
contained.
That keeps you contained, yeah. And this is what we mean with anti-establishment feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for us, the Rebel Alliance kind of symbolises this idea of breaking free, of doing what we want to do, and that means a different thing to every different person.
Sure.
And so we look at that to kind of understand by distinction what the Empire is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of authoritarian, very strict rules, that sort of thing.
Sure.
Like, I can't speak for anyone else, but I'd love to go out into a field and just take all my clothes off and just, like, sing a bit and start a fire.
You don't do that?
I mean, I would love to do that.
Every Thursday.
I want to be invited to that party.
Right, exactly. Like, that's what society should encourage me
that's
to
what
do.
The rebels do at Endor, just walk in the middle of a woods and just start screaming and Ewoks start throwing spears at them.
Honestly, if the next film was just, like, 90% naked fire starting amongst rebels, I'd be on it. I'd be so down for that. I'd be like, this is my political views right here.
There's one Disney shareholder who's really pushing for that idea.
It's you.
Like, replies
like your one share in Disney.
Yeah. replies to all the shareholder emails and like clicks reply all and just pitches that idea. Like every financial call.
Even like a GIF in like a group chat.
I want a Star Wars. I want a Daft Punk soundtrack, fire dancing rebels, Chewbacca surfing. What more do you want? Yeah.
What more do you need?
I think the thing we can conclude from this section of the podcast is that if Star Wars needs anything, it's more nakedness and fire starting. Can we just fundamentally agree?
Yeah. We can agree on that. That's a great idea.
Misa Leg idea.
Sweet.
And here's Boss Nass.
Loving.
Eleanor, your
turn. So, Eleanor, yeah, your Star Wars.
Mine is nowhere near as deep as that.
Yeah, same.
I'm too woke.
He's too woke. He can't control the wokeness. I had an Star idea woke. Before I came in, and then, like, listening to everyone else's ideas, like, another idea popped into my head, which has probably already been written in fan fiction so many times. So I've got two.
One
is just the basicness of the fact that with the current trilogy, you had Kylo Ren and he's Han Solo's son and he's bad and it's all like in your face all at once. And
he's
like,
the bad guy.
He's the bad guy. And he wants to be like scary. His grandfather and all that. And I'm just like, whoa, like this all happened at once. Like I need to see that progression. Like as a writer, like I need to see the progression of how that happened. Because just seeing it like that is not effective. So yeah, I need another trilogy, like, leading up to that.
That's a strong show.
So that was my first one. Like, I needed to see more of that, more of Kylo Ren's character and more of his progression of how he got to that state. And then the second one was just thinking of, like, going off of Kat's idea of, like, a series. Hogwarts, but with Jedi school.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah.
And I am down for this.
I feel like this has been, like, this has probably already been done, but I just, because I one scene sticks
Yoda
in my
Wars.
Mind. Yes. Yoda's army. Like, I can't
Hoth
remember.
Hothwarts, there you go.
I'm so trash. Like, I can't remember the name of the film, but it's the one where Darth Vader becomes, Anakin Skywalker
becomes. Oh, Revenge
becomes,
of the Sith.
Yeah, Revenge of the Sith.
Sick
where
film.
You see that scene where all the young Jedis have been slaughtered.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's so powerful,
oh,
and so heartbreaking. And that's only, from what I remember, it's the only scene where you realise, oh my god, there are actual young students trained to be, it's not just Anakin, like there's so many young kids trained to be Jedis, and this is the only scene that you see of them, and it's so heartbreaking. Like, I just kind of want to see more young Jedis.
And there's that scene obviously in Attack of the Clones as well, where Obi-Wan can't find his planet and he goes into Yoda's classroom, like, Yoda's like, Master Kenobi's lost our planet, how embarrassing. Like,
and
also, like, I feel like, not to kind of co-opt your point, but like, in my day job, I'm a political researcher, and so often we think about these, like, political, military things as kind of abstract stuff, and we don't see the kind of real elements of these things. And there have been so many conflicts where, like, you know, kids have died, like, you know, horrible things have happened. And I feel like an important part of fantasy sci-fi is addressing that, like, and bringing it into, like, our public consciousness.
Sure.
Yeah, and so I feel like,
especially like kind of talking about like child soldiers. So
yeah,
I think definitely with that, because the heartbreaking thing about it is that they're all kids.
Yeah.
When you see Anakin Skywalker and Luke Skywalker, they're, you know, the young adults, and they're becoming, it's kind of focused on, like, kind of going off your point about, like, we need to see more representation. It's kind of like, you know, the young white boy becoming a man, becoming a Jedi, you know, that's what it is. But, like, it's so much more than that, because there's, like, with the whole Star Wars universe, it's a world, and there's more than just one character. And I don't know, I just kind of need to, I want to explore more characters and more of that world, and I think focusing on, like, the Jedi school would be a cool way of doing that in, like, a series.
So make sure you visit Galaxy's Edge, open now.
But I feel like, this is kind of getting into, like, I'm sorry because I'm about to tank your podcast, but, like, Gamergate territory. In that we're trying to, like, what we're talking about here is fundamentally in, like, gaming, sci-fi, fantasy, potentially even horror, because it's associated with those genres. In that kind of culture, we're looking at a broadening of the narratives. We're looking at, like, women, queer people, people of colour, that sort of thing.
Sure.
Getting, like, more airtime sounds a bit flippant, but, like, you know, more representation in those genres. Because, look, Star Wars is great, and I love it, and it will always be a part of, like, my sci-fi education. But I feel like Luke Skywalker being a white dude is really interesting. Luke Skywalker being a woman, being someone of colour, you know, there's a lot of things that you could talk about there. Like, it's not a straightforward narrative. It's not a straightforward, I was a farm boy, now I'm a hero, now we're going to win. There's a lot of issues that you could encounter there.
I think the thing is with Star Wars is that it's because it's creating, it's such a huge universe. It's not our world. So the reason I loved Rogue One so much is because it took away from the characters that we were so used to seeing and created these new characters and showed, because in the very first movie that people saw in the 70s, that's how it ends, with them giving the Death Star plans to Leia. I just thought how clever that was, that they just created these new characters and, like, what happened before that, because there's this whole world that, like you said, like, so many different aspects that haven't been explored, and so many different people.
And there are so many more complex characters that ultimately are responsible for the origins of the entire Star Wars story.
Responsibility as well, and impact of it as well. Like, so, like with Rogue One, like, they're the whole reason that they got the plans to the Death Star and were able to, like, destroy it. And in the original films, you never saw these people. Like, you never really heard about them.
I think we're all, agree 100%. And I think we're all, you know, I guess to an extent equally guilty of assuming that fans of a particular genre belong to an entire group in society of a particular gender, of a particular race, of a particular subculture. And I think that is something that film producers are susceptible to believing as well, and believing that is the modern audience that drives the box office, which is ultimately why these films are invested in, which is why the, you know, why banks and financiers aren't interested in investing in these films, because they know what a particular audience is. But we do need to have much more of a conversation about how these audiences are diversifying, how we do have more complex minorities with different stories who are, you know, which, you know, which do have, like you were saying, Ella, Star Wars as part of their integral sci-fi education.
For sure. And this thing, at this point, we can't ignore the fact that Star Wars is part of the Western canon of science fiction. You know, like, it just is. It's such a cultural moment for us that we have to, like, accept it.
Yeah, like, people, like, when you say you've never seen Star Wars, it's always like a
But the thing I'd put to, you know, and I know that there tends to be in the sci-fi community, in the gaming community, in the fantasy community, there tends to be a lot of backlash about, or can be a lot of backlash about, people wanting to integrate, or people accepting sort of what is generally considered politically correct things, you know, inclusion of people of colour, LGBT people, whatever. But let me put this to any of you guys. If Luke Skywalker, or any subsequent main characters of Star Wars, turned out to be trans, if it turned out Luke Skywalker was a trans man, right, was assigned female at birth, and was, you know, at some point in their life, became...
Have a transition.
A masculine, developed a masculine identity, and so on. How would that affect the story? Would it really affect the first three films? As in 4 to 6?
Not really, but for some people it would be like such a thing in the back of their mind that it could kind of be distracting for some people.
Yeah, distracting.
That's really the only thing, though, because it doesn't affect the storyline.
Exactly. Sure. And there is, of course, and I understand that for some people they might feel, you know, attacked by what they consider the politically correct agenda. But, you know, would it not potentially... develop another layer of richness to the story? It's just a thing I'm putting out there as a...
No, that's true, and I guess we...
As a libtard cuck. That's what I'm putting out.
But I guess as so many of these sci-fi stories are based, and so much of sci-fi literature in general is based on these very Greek, epic, sort of, you know, sort of a classical antiquity tragedies.
Homer's Odyssey.
Yeah, so there is, you know, and in these stories there is... The discussion about things like gender and identity is so limited in scope, and even then it becomes such a political thing, as though it's like a war between man and woman, but there is no there is no sort of subtext beneath that. And so that's, and that, you know, I guess that kind of becomes the staple for the majority of modern sci-fi. But you know, I'm approaching this with an optimistic perspective, in that it is branching out. And I think with this overdose of streaming that we're seeing from Netflix and Disney Plus and Hulu, and the Apple thing, that we're...
soon to be like a million others.
We are, like, they are identifying the complexity of us as the like, we are the consumer generation.
Yeah.
We are the consumers that has every single, you know, every series for whatever we want, whatever category, whatever genre, whenever we want it. We have to get an Uber in about 4 minutes.
So what's yours?
Mine is, I guess, I mean, to an extent, less intellectually complex than that. But to be honest,
Mace Windu shopping trips, Mace Windu supermarket sweep.
I'm gonna go for a piss, but I love you all.
Thank you.
you enjoy, young man.
I will.
So mine is, I feel like I'm kind of jumping on the bandwagon here, but again, I haven't seen Joker yet, to be honest, so I can't fully use this as a kind of thorough analysis. But mine is a Vader origin story in the style of the new upcoming Joker film. It's called Vader, and I love Revenge of the Sith. I think it's actually one of the best Star Wars films, in my opinion.
It is set after Revenge of the Sith, though, so he's already in the Vader suit.
No, this is the origins of Anakin Skywalker.
Oh wow!
This is one film about the origins of Anakin Skywalker.
So but you're remaking the whole three
but
films.
Essentially, yeah. But it focuses on one main film. I don't think it needs to be more than one film. Called Vader. But essentially, it mainly focuses on how his mum is, you know, kidnapped by the Tuscan Raiders. Yeah. And then after she escapes slavery and she's sold off to another farmer who's then abducted by the Raiders. And essentially follows Anakin going after, you know, again, pursuing... It's a long, drawn-out journey of him pursuing the Tuscan Raiders to save his mother. And then, naturally, when he finds her, when he finds the Tuscan camp, she's been murdered by them. And then, basically, instead of it being a story about Anakin's... his quest to overcome his guilt as to why he couldn't save her, which is, I guess, the driving force behind why he becomes Vader in the Lucas trilogy. But instead, it focuses on... your Anakin's views towards the Tuscans as people.
Okay.
So essentially, he goes into the mindset of, I mean, he's an innocent boy. He's been shrouded his entire life in, Jedi school and, being in trade in Coruscant. And so his mind is so sort of enveloped in the Force and how the Force is supposed to be used to be good that he sort of, he almost naturally falls into this perception that the Jedi are this superior people. That those who can wield the Force for good are the sort of the moral authority of the universe. And so when his mother is kidnapped by Tuscan Raiders and he pursues them, he then perceives the Tuscans as these barbarian savages.
Okay.
And so as a result, he develops this mentality of this almost like Jedi supremacism.
Okay.
So it develops these very supremacist views towards...
I think that's really clever because... you know, we have all these ideas of heroism in movies and what is right and what is wrong, and that's very rarely challenged. You know, we have very preconstructed ideas of what is right and what is wrong.
Yeah.
I think that's really, you know, we have the Jedis and they are right and they are the knights, and you know, I think that's really, especially with the sort of talk of, you know, racism and white supremacism and things like this.
Exactly.
That would be a really interesting take on it, with this, of someone being really, you know, taking it too far.
No, thank you, thank you.
You know, I'm trying to think of the word. What is it?
I guess,
I know what you mean,
Sure. But like, and I guess like his, you know, his mind view once he can't save his mother is not that like, oh, I was too weak and I couldn't save her. It's that, well, you know, we are, the Jedis are the moral authority of the universe and these savages have killed
my mother.
So he essentially tries to then seeks out to brainwash the other Jedis into sort of really, I guess, elevating the sense of Jedi supremacy.
Like has happened in so many cases in history. So.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. But that's the thing, because it's, you know, sci-fi is so reliant on these, your Greek tragic epics, but in real life, radicalization comes from this sense of supremacy, in the sense of, you know, just a fundamental, human, like, this idea of, like, a fundamental human inequality.
Well, sci-fi, I think, not necessarily Greek epic, but it focuses it without history, without, you know, our world. We wouldn't have sci-fi because it's created of the things that we've experienced and things that we've learned in history, so...
Exactly, yeah. So, no, 100%.
That's an interesting take. I like that. I like the sound of that.
So that's my Vader origin story, a story about supremacy and the vulnerability of the Force as a moral authority, as the moral code of the universe, because that can be, because like all ideologies, that can be corrupted and used for its own supremacist reasons. As with any religion or political viewpoint, it's, you know, it's all susceptible to what one man thinks against what everyone else thinks.
Okay.
And the power that the play of power that comes with that.
Fantastic.
So we are out of time, but thank you very much for listening, everyone. Thank you to our wonderful guest.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Come back soon.
Please come on again in the future, because you've all been such a laugh and have all had like amazing perspectives and really, really interesting opinions.
Yeah.
All three of you. So yeah, we'll see you soon for the next episode of Anakin Skywalker Defense Force.
Bye bye.
Take care, guys. Enjoy yourselves. Bye bye.
Thank you for listening to Tom Hanks Defense Force. Find us and join the conversation on Twitter and Facebook.